This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Before I transplant them out. It is a little bit tedious, but if you factor in all the time spent with it, you know, if you just seeded your onions outside, which I don't really recommend because they just don't have the time to put on that nice big green growth, which then will lead to a nice bigger bulb. So I like to get them out probably the first half of April to transplant them out as little seedlings. And I space them 3 inches apart at that point. And it's a little tedious transplanting so many things. There's no machine that does that for me. And with the economy, I had to lay off my staff. So, oh, wait a minute. I never did have a staff. So the idea is to get those in the ground early enough to get some nice growth. And then about into July or August, I'll start withholding water when half the stalks have fallen over. In August, I'll push over the rest and let them stay out in the ground for another couple of weeks without any water. I don't pull them and leave them on the surface, but I will eventually pull them and then dry them. But we'll talk more about that in, August or September. Okay, let's take another call. Good morning, Joanne. You are with the Dirtbag.
Yeah, hello. I don't know whether you can answer this. If you can, it's all right, but... Well, I've listened to some programs on KBOO. They talked about genetically engineered foods. So I just wonder, does that mean that there are genetically engineered fruit trees and that in this country? And, you know, thank you for the program.
Yeah, you're welcome. And we can answer that.
Yeah, we can.
Wow.
There is only one genetically engineered fruit tree that I've ever heard of in recent times. Some Canadian company has developed an apple that doesn't get brown when you cut it. I just read about that again. They're trying to get that into the marketplace, and as you can imagine, there's significant resistance to it. Other than that, there are natural genetic mutations that occur in fruit trees. That's how you get up all these different apple varieties where they'll have like a Red Delicious and then a different kind of Red Delicious that's like a sport that shows up on the tree as a natural process of nature. But in terms of genetic modified fruiting plants, I don't know of any except this one apple.
Right. So all of our they're naturally engineered, not genetically
that's right,
engineered.
Right. You know, and breeding is really a lot of fun. We mess around with it a little bit where we'll try to create some new varieties by isolating flowers, putting bags over them, then go and pollinate them with flowers from a specific variety so hopefully the seeds from those will have the characteristics we're looking for. And that's just what happens in nature as well. So it's really a lot of fun. And those little seeds are like little presents. You know, you never know what's going to happen when you open them up and see what's there.
And we may want to further differentiate that from not further differentiate, but we want to make sure that there's no confusion about hybrids, especially in vegetable seeds, that these are not genetically engineered. Their genes are not engineered in any way, shape, or form. We've been hybridizing for probably as long as we've been farming and gathering, thinking, gosh, if you know, this corn is so dinky, what if we crossbred that with something else, you know, just put the pollen onto here and got that, you know, that's just hybridization there. That's not...
Yeah, and that's the same thing we're doing with fruit.
Right. Yep. And it doesn't have anything to do with putting splicing a gene of a right. bacteria into something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those are all fine. And also grafting is natural. There's nothing really unnatural about that. You may have seen branches that will cross, be rubbing, and then finally they'll start growing together.
That's right.
And what we're doing is just kind of in a controlled manner.
Because that's the only way you can really replicate that variety. If you don't graft that variety, if you just let a rootstock grow up, you're not going to have that same specific fruit that you really enjoy.
Right. And it's likely that it would be something inferior. That's just the way the chance runs. But it might be superior, but it might only be a, you know, 1/10,000th chance or something.
That's a
like
big
that.
Might. Yeah, it is, I think, about 1 in 10,000. Yeah.
And it takes years in order, or maybe not years, but, you know, to grow that out, And so,
one sort of fascinating experiment we've done is we take, if some of you may know of columnar apples, which is this really unusual form of apple that grows straight up without side branches. And if you take a fruit, and that's a natural genetic mutation, that form, if you take a fruit from a columnar apple tree, extract the seeds, plant the seeds, about 25% of the seedlings will have that form.
Mm-hmm. So you have to grow all the seedlings out in order to
You could grow a whole bunch of seedlings and then see which ones have the right form, and then decide if you want to select those, plant those, then start looking for disease resistance, then start looking for good quality fruit, and you know, maybe a few thousand seeds, you might get something that's better than what you already have.
That's a lot of time, Jim.
It is, you know. Yeah, like he's the saying is, you know, the best time to plant a fruit tree is 20 years ago.
Right.
But the second best time is today.
That's right.
But, you know, so you just got to start, and then time passes, and there you have it.
Pretty soon you've got a tree full of fruit.
Well, and even if you have a small yard, you can have a tree. Because of the dwarfing rootstocks that are available now, you can have a tree even if you just have a patio.
Right. And that's the most appropriate size for city dwellers.
Mm-hmm.
You'll learn all about that at the fruit propagation fair.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Okay, we'll take our last musical break here. The door is going way back, and this is called Not to Touch the Earth, which reminds us to tell you, don't plant your stuff too early.
Not to touch the earth, not to see the sun, nothing left to do but run, 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 let's run. Let's run. House upon the hill, moon is lying still, shadows of the trees, witnessing the wild breeze, come on baby, run.
Building.
That's right. Waking me up.
All right. That's 1968. That takes us back a few years, eh? Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Now, if you have questions on seed starting, still have time to call, but I want to get into the my queen breeding process. Here's, you know, this is a show on breeding here, I guess. You know,
that's right.
That we're talking about here.
Right.
We're making new stock here.
Mm-hmm.
And what has led to this is the fact that we get a lot of die-offs over the winter. And because many of those queens that we're using in town here have been bred in California and Hawaii. And this is all my speculation. As far as I know, nobody is breeding on a big scale in a major city. So it's an undertaking that we hopefully we'll be able to have some, get quite a few queens that we can repopulate our colonies with. But these queens that come from out of the area and realize that no honeybees are native to North America, so we have no natural queens. We're trying to get a little bit more of a naturalized queen, if you will, here in the city. But there's nothing, you know, we're not trying to revert to what was here before or whatever, because there wasn't anything. There's no native honeybees in North America. So what we're trying to do is to, a friend and I are embarking on this endeavor, this project, is we are trying to, what we will use are the eggs of queens and colonies that have overwintered successfully without any treatment and without any supplemental feeding. We want those that somehow have been able to overwinter on their own, so to speak. And so we'll take eggs and then hence larvae from those colonies, and we might use 30 or 50 of these eggs, and she can be laying 1,500 a day. So she does a lot. So we're not taking a lot of those. We will take those. The process is really kind of fascinating. We'll take those little one-day-old larvae, and with a little tiny scoop, take them out of the colony and put them into a special queen cell. I'm going to have to simplify this. And we will line up these cells. We might put 30 or 50 into a colony that we know has no queen in it. If there was a queen, the bees would come along and kill everything that we just put in there, because it's competition. But if it's queenless, then they will raise all of these 30 or 50 queens trying to re-queen their colony. And we then monitor it very closely, and it's just a matter of days. I mean, we count the days. And so we would need to come in to round up numbers 9 or 10 days later and take these queen cells that have been finished off by the bees out, and because we can't let any of them hatch, because the first one that hatches would go around and kill all the other ones. So then what we will do is take these individual but unhatched queen cells and put those into its own little colony along with several thousand bees. We then have to get the queen mated. She'll hatch inside these mating boxes that we will have distributed around the city, because the queens never mate inside the colony. They have to fly to mate, and they will mate with many different drones, maybe up to 20 different drones. And we can, so where the drones come from is also important as where the queen came from, because we controlled the queen. We got her larvae from colonies that overwintered. But when she mates with drones, and this is in an area in the air, maybe a mile from her colony, it's called a drone congregation area, where drones from many different colonies congregate. You know, it's kind of like a meet and greet bar or whatever, a special type of bar. And so what we're doing now, my friend and I are trying to saturate an area of Northeast Portland with overwintered colonies, our colonies, that have overwintered drones in them then. So hopefully we can control somewhat where the queen came from and where the drones came from, you know, the semen from the drones. And then we get a mated queen, and hopefully, you know, she'll do better overwintering. You know, we only get one winter a year to test our hypotheses here.
So you're going to have 30 to 50 yes. hives out there
little,
that are
little
queenless.
Tiny. Well, until they mate.
Yeah.
Right.
So each cell is going to have a queen that hatches
yes.
out of it in its own separate hive.
Yes. So we're busy putting equipment together now so we can distribute our queens around. So I'll have information on this also on the KBOO website.
Well, that will keep you out of the pool halls and taverns for a couple of nights.
It already has. Joni Cooper, thank you very much for coming on The Dirtbag.
Thank you, Glenn.
We'll see you at the Fruit Propagation Fair in Canby.
This
Sunday. Clackamas County Fairgrounds, 10 o'clock. Jim, as you always, thanks a million.
Yep. Thank you, Glenn.
Thanks for listening. Be well.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd Avenue, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. This program was also made possible in part by Artemis Foods, Portland's local organic and sustainable catering company since 2001. Special events, corporate and wedding catering with seasonal menus and service supported by sustainable business operations. They offer full service and drop-off catering. Information by phone or through their website, www.artemisfoods.com. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 12:01. We are cutting into the time of Jazz Lives with your host, Nick Geffro.
This is Patrick Wilson with KBOO News. An assistant principal in Everett, Washington, bullied his way onto a student's Facebook page under the pretense of determining if a fellow student was cyberbullying. The principal went through the student's page and used it to access several other students' pages, in spite of strong protests. As a result of what was discovered on one of the pages, a student at the school has been suspended. The American Civil Liberties Union is investigating to see if the student's civil rights and privacy were violated. South Dakota is the first state to legalize school employees to carry guns on the job. This follows a proposal by the NRA authorizing armed guards in schools and attempts by several other states to legalize the practice. A number of other states do allow teachers to carry guns in the classroom, but without any specific authorization. The UN peacekeeping mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo says it will stop working with two Congolese army battalions accused of multiple rapes unless they prosecute the responsible soldiers. A senior UN official says 126 women were raped and two people killed in November of last year when government forces fled to a small eastern town, but no substantial action has been taken. Unless the Congolese authorities take immediate legal action, the peacekeepers have threatened to cease supporting them. The Gresham-Barlow School District in Oregon says it won't renew the contract of its openly gay elementary school principal. A group of parents who support the principal plan to challenge the decision at Thursday night's school board meeting. The principal's attorney believes that the school board is discriminating against his client because of his sexual orientation. Agents on the U.S.-Mexican border can now look at laptop computer files only if Homeland Security decides there is reasonable suspicion that something illegal is happening. This is the ruling of the San Francisco-based U.S. Court of Appeals, which has jurisdiction over U.S. southern borders. Previously, agents had free rein searching vehicles, luggage, property, and electronics without a warrant. While unreasonable searches are banned by the Fourth Amendment, they are allowed in this case because of security at U.S. border. This is Patrick Wilson with KBOO Portland, Oregon. Tune in every night at 5 p.m. for more local, national, and international news. Thanks for listening.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM in Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM in Corvallis and Albany, and around the world at KBOO.com.